عليك صلى الله يا خير خلق الله والآل والأصحاب والقوم أهل الله عليك صلى الله يا خير خلق الله والآل والأصحاب والقوم أهل الله.
You're listening to Your World Today on Radio Islam International. We have with us at the studios Ridwan Nurbai, who we chatted to before he had undertaken his trip to Everest, and while he was there, we received regular updates. There were moments where we worried, making intense dua that everything was going well. He returned safely to South Africa, and we have him with us at the studios this afternoon. Brother Ridwan, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Good to have you with us. I wonder, you know, being on the ground, being within civilization, being within, you know, normal buildings and home, not a place where you are at your most comfortable best.
Yes. Look, it was an awesome trip. The experience, you know, you bring it back home with you. It's challenging for the body. It's physically, mentally, but it's one of the best treks you actually get in the world. Although there's many summits at Everest, it's not just Everest itself. There's many treks to conquer, which a lot of trekkers do from time to time. They don't do the whole trek. You know, they go out for 3 days, 4 days, and they call it a day. So it's been wonderful. This is all the pure creation of Allah. Nobody else has developed this thing. You know, he's created the seven continents or the seven summits to stabilize the earth, and it's simple as that.
Subhanallah. Okay, so let's start off. We chatted to you that Monday, then you left South Africa. Where did you fly to?
Okay, we flew direct to Dubai, and then we were on standby in Dubai to fly to Kathmandu, to Nepal.
That is the capital of Nepal, Kathmandu.
Yes, so we flew from Dubai, we went into Nepal, and we stayed there for a day. They call it to acclimatize. It's more of where you have to go and visit monasteries and temples, and it's part of the process. It's part of the religion of the Hindu culture. And it was nice to see, you know, different culture. And so we followed the process, and eventually, you know, if you need to cut off, you can always say, I don't need to be there, I'll be okay where I am. You know, you wait till you fly out from Lukla, you know, then you fly out.
Oh, so from Kathmandu, then you've got to take another flight.
From Kathmandu, we go back to the airport, and then we fly from Kathmandu, we fly to Lukla. But for us, it never transpired like that, unfortunately.
There was some clips that you had sent of a video in a helicopter.
Yes. Now, what happened there was the Lukla airport was shut down. So we were trapped at the airport for about 7 hours.
In Kathmandu.
In Kathmandu. Okay, flying out to Lukla. So we never made Lukla. So what we decided to do, instead of waiting for the next day, because we're uncertain about the weather, because Lukla sits in between two valleys, and it's normally very, very sort of overcast and clouded and musty. We chartered a private helicopter to start the trek on the same day. And we did that, and we got dumped off somewhere in the middle of nowhere. It's like a Bear Grylls. You know, we didn't get to a village where we were put down and said, okay, we'll start from there. And then we started trekking in the late afternoon, just before around Asr time to Maghrib. So we did that first day trekking at night till about 11 o'clock.
Now, when you trek each day, you're trekking with the object being the base camp, and we'll talk more about that. Do you have a specific point that you've got to reach to every night? Is there a camp that is set up where you spend the night, and what sort of facilities are there?
Yes, for every trek, for every day as you trek, there's a tea house at every sort of village, or every sort of village in between, and that's obviously organized by the agent, and so you're pretty well set up in the sense of where you have a sleeping, you know, a mattress to sleep on. That's about all that you have. And you do have facilities to water and to, you know, ablution, etc., which is not a problem. But it's quite difficult because the waters are sort of below freezing point and not that easily to use. And, you know, you're limited to having showers and stuff like that. So the higher you climb, the more expensive this track becomes. And people are not aware of it. You know, they think, oh, we're only going to pay this and this is it. But it becomes quite an expensive sport as you move on.
So to get to Everest Base Camp, how many days ideally does a person need to set aside?
Okay, you need plus minus at least 3 weeks. Okay, you obviously have a full insurance cover. If the airport is shut down, you have an extra day, you know, where your insurance will cover you. But then you stand, sort of it's risky because you have to evaluate. You want to leave the day after or you want to charter a private helicopter, which you pay for. It's quite expensive. It's like 3,000 rand for a one-way trip, and it depends where they're going to drop you. It's all weather conditioned. It depends. And the helicopter will go into a certain area and they'll just dump you off. And then from there, you're on your own.
And day by day, what is the distance that you've got to cover?
Okay. It varies. Okay, some days are quite nice and comfortable, but most of the days you're looking between 12 and 15 kilometers. It's not difficult. The problem is the altitude that sort of starts to build in. You know, the higher you go, the worse it becomes. Being it a long track in comparison, you know, to other tracks, and that's where you get caught out. Okay, obviously, you know, you need a lot of liquid, a supply of liquid for your body. You need to take a lot of electrolytes for hydration purposes. And you just make dua that you're going to make it through.
What do you have in your bag and what is the weight of your bag?
Okay, look, your day pack is all your necessities.
So you don't have to carry your entire...
No, no, you have porters that carry your kit. Which is limited to about 17 kg. You can go above that, but you hire another private porter to carry extra stuff if you need. Your day pack is about between 7 and maybe up to 10 kg the most. But you try and limit yourself to make, you know, your body weight much more easier to track. The heavier you carry, the worse it becomes for you. You will struggle. So you carry your basic water, about 4, 5, maybe about 6 liters you carry, but you must have that. It's compulsory. And your very, very basic snacks that you need, and your first aid, and that's about it. There's no luxury, you know. You get luxury when you get to the end of the day. Then you'll be much more comfortable in what you want to eat and what you want to do and stuff like that.
So do the porters, the shippers, do they remain with you throughout the day, or they continue at their own faster pace since they're accustomed to it?
They're not at a faster pace. They sort of try to be at a faster pace because one porter is carrying about close to 35 kg on his back. So he's carrying two tracker's bags. That's how they have the limitations set in. And as you track, you'll come across all the porters sitting in one corner. And then eventually they will leave either before you or after you. If they behind you, you give way and you let them go past. You know, the same comes with the animals, the donkeys, the yaks that come past you, because they carry a lot of equipment and gas and food supply. Those animals work, you know, day in, day out, nonstop.
So what happens with the donkeys? People load the donkey and the donkeys...
Yeah, there's hundreds of donkeys which go across all the suspension bridges, the same bridges that you go across, and they load it with food supply, water, gas, all the necessary stuff that you're going to need as you go higher into every different area. And that's why it becomes more expensive. But then the donkeys only go up to a certain point. The yaks are designed where they can go right into base camp. They actually go into altitude.
So tell us about the yak. How would you describe this animal?
It's a huge, it looks like a buffalo. It's huge with big horns. They're sort of, you know, bowed down when they're walking. I suppose that's because of all the weight. And they carry huge gas tanks, you know, on either side of them. It's quite phenomenal, actually. Very, very interesting to know that they actually carry all your supply for you.
Did you need to have a donkey or a yak?
No. Our porters would obviously would use that for our supplies to get to the top. It depends now, you know, we're told to stay away from the meat, you know, because, you know, it's a couple of days old by the time it gets to you. In any case, there's no halal meat there for you. So you a vegetarian.
And during the day, what sort of snacks do you keep in your day pack?
Just the normal chocolate, sweet stuff, maybe fruit gums, a lot of dry fruit, stuff like that. But speaking for myself, you know, I think I was consuming about 6 to 7 liters of water a day. And I used about maybe 500 ml of electrolytes, you know, on a daily basis. And it was just good enough for me. It was perfect. I would obviously have a good vegetarian supper in the evening, you know, when I reach that destination for that day. That's where you are. You know, your water is absolutely compulsory. You can't afford to have all the soft drinks, and it's not healthy for you.
Day by day, so what is the highlights as you're going through the days now? You know, coming closer towards the top.
Yeah.
At sort of what altitude do you first start off? What is the meterage above sea level that when you start off?
Yeah, look, when you look like you're sitting at about the moment, I'm talking if you at Lukla, because that's where your trek actually starts. That's sitting at 2,800 meters above sea level. But the air is absolutely filthy. It's dirty. You find it very hard to breathe, not because of altitude, but because of the odor in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So it makes it difficult. So you start at 2,800 meters, and you trek from there right into base camp. And taking you up to 5,300 odd meters above sea level. That's close to, 19,000 feet.
And how many kilos, you know, walking distance do you actually cover over the period that you're trekking?
Look, on the 16, 17 day, we covered on a normal trek right up to base camp. It's about 130 odd kilometers. Okay, what I did is I did two extra acclimatization climbs beyond that. Without the group, just myself and the guide, going close to the 6,000 mark. So that gave me a coverage of 155,000 kilometers.
And tell me, in terms of, you know, being at base camp itself, you up 5,000 plus meters above sea level. What is it like? How does it feel to breathe like?
Mufti Yusuf, it's... From the second day, you already feel the difficulty. You know, your body goes into this sort of a degrade mode from the second day, from the third day already. So the idea of the trek is to sort of reduce your pace extensively, to go absolutely slow to be successful. All right? Together with that, you have to pump a lot of liquid into your body. You don't have a choice. You have to do it. If you hate water, you're going to have to do it if you want to be successful. And those are one of the important factors of it. If you think that you're going to race it, I doubt you're going to make it. You're going to have a problem. Because everybody will experience some sort of altitude sickness during that process, even myself. Even the most experienced climbers experience the altitude sickness.
And in terms of the water,
yes,
the water, are you able to reload your water every day at the camp? And is the water drinkable? Do you need to treat the water?
Yeah, yes. They sell water in sealed bottles to you. And again, the higher you go, the more expensive it becomes. So 1 liter of water will cost you about maybe 70 rand in our money. So that's quite a bit. Then they give you water from the rivers, from the stream. Which they boil for you, and then on top of that you use your purification tablets. That needs to stay in your bottle for about at least an hour before you consume it, and it works like a dream. You will not get sick if you do that process. If you don't use the tablet, you could be in big trouble, because we are not the locals of Nepal. We are, you know, foreign people coming into Nepal and attempting this. The local people drink the water as it's normal, as we would drink water in South Africa. So, yeah, the purification tablets work. They work perfectly all the time. And I used it quite often to sort of cut the cost down of buying water all the time, because, you know, they start charging you double and triple.
Tell us about your teammates who you were climbing with, all from South Africa.
Yeah, we were four of us in total with myself. We did Kilimanjaro together, and, you know, after we, in fact, while we were climbing Kili, we decided let's do Everest and see how, you know, let's go and do it. You know, we are here, and so we decided. The same team teamed up for Everest EBC, and two of the guys got very sick on the second day already. You know, one of my colleagues got absolutely sick, and he was like on the verge of giving up. So the motivation had to kick in from the rest of the teammates. That's what it's all about. You know, we're a team, so we got to work together. And my immediate colleague that spent every day with me on his last 3 days, he struggled a lot with symptoms of headaches and dizziness and sinus, etc., due to altitude. Nevertheless, everybody made it to base camp, and the very next day at 4 o'clock in the morning, I decided I'm going to go up to close to the 6,000 mark. But I think at that point in time, everybody said, you know, that's it, we've done, we finished, we need to get out of here. But the worst was still to come.
In one of the clips that you sent us, you showed us a picture of what you termed as the death zone.
Yeah.
What is that?
The moment you hit the 3,000 meter altitude, you're already in the death zone. You see a lot of people struggling. You see people coughing. You see people sitting. You see people falling asleep. I've got a good few photos of that where people are actually sleeping. It's already, your body's already gone into that process where it's gone down. It all depends now. Sometimes it could be the lack of sleep, which is one of the symptoms of altitude. It makes you tired, it makes you sleepy, drowsiness, or either you haven't climbed before. You know, it all depends. Different people have different experiences on the trek. But the higher you get, the worse it becomes, and it is absolutely a death zone, because you're either there, you're going to make it, or you're not going to make it.
And in the hike to base camp, do people actually die? Has anyone died in recent days?
Whilst we were on the south side, and you get the north side or where the Tibetan people are, there was an avalanche, right, according to what we received the information, and there was panic and stuff like that. There were 8 or 9 people that actually died due to the avalanche pushing the rocks down. But for us, we experienced one avalanche. It was a small one. Before we arrived, we could see, you know, base, and we could see the summit of Everest as we approached it. And yes, people do die actually before base camp. Likewise, people will die before getting up to the highest point in Africa, which I've seen a year ago. Two deaths at Kilimanjaro from the UK. So it can happen at any given point in time.
What was the cause? It was altitude sickness?
Just altitude.
And how long did it take a person? Were they really, like, you know, sick and pushing on, or it just came and struck suddenly?
It. You know, when people are sick, they you don't want to give up in a hurry. You know, you want to push on. And you need to take the instruction of getting down to a lower altitude and to sort of minimize the symptoms within your body. And you know, I can understand, you know, you've flown all over, halfway around the world to go and do this. But if sickness comes, it's going to come. You know, it's hard to say, look, I'm not going to get sick, or I'll make it through this. It's very difficult. You will only know as you trek day by day how you feel the night before, and how you feel the next day, and how you feel during that process in the middle of the day. The symptoms attack you at any time.
So there's a fine line between pushing yourself and doing something risky.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a very fine line. And but once you're there, there's no turning back.
And in terms of Kilimanjaro, when you actually get to the summit, there's a short period that you spend there, you are prepared and you go up. Maybe it's they predict what is the time, the best time to be there.
Yes.
And then you spend a few minutes there, take your photos, and then you come down.
Yes.
Is it the same with base camp? How long do people tend to spend at base camp?
Look, okay, base camp is actually lower than Kilimanjaro. Base camp is sitting at 5,300, close to 5,400 meters above sea level. Kilimanjaro, the summit of Kili, is sitting at about 5,800, almost 5,900. However, I found a base camp to be more sort of tighter in the oxygen level, and quite strange because I'm not that high, you know. But I found it more tougher when I did the 5550 climb the day after at 4 o'clock in the morning. That was like really excruciating. It was very difficult. I literally took like 5 steps at a time. But there's a difference. I found Kilimanjaro to be difficult on the night climb, because you climb at night to go to the 3 points of Africa, right? To Uhuru Peak. That's your summit of Africa. But the first 2-3 hours of Kili climbing at night was absolutely difficult, because you're climbing in and it's ice cold. And that is actually absolutely risky. And but you just continue right up to Fajr time, and when you get to the peak of the summit of Africa. Base camp, not many groups will be found there. We were 3 groups out of more than 100 people I've seen on track. Some of them diverted into other tracks. We only found about 3 groups that were there at base camp.
And spend the night there.
And then once you've at base camp and you've successfully celebrated and you've taken all your snapshots, you got to move out of there. You got to go low. You got to sleep lower. So you're not going to stay there. You got to go down and sleep. So you climb high and you sleep low.
Okay.
That is the whole process behind it. And then the following day, you'll climb higher and then you'll sleep low again. That is part of acclimatization and reacclimatize. Okay, because obviously the oxygen in your brain, there's no oxygen in the atmosphere. Base camp, I think, has less than 40% of oxygen. When I got to Kalapata, the 5550 climb, I think I had less than 30% or 25% oxygen in the atmosphere. But it's all doable. And anybody can go there and attempt it and do it and enjoy themselves.
What was the highlight of the entire experience?
My highlight was getting across the suspension bridges. And the day we got to the Hillary Bridge, it was like a lot of excitement, because that is one of the highest bridges in the Kumbu region that was obviously designed. And it was like, you know, the excitement sort of kicked in, because we started getting closer to base camp and we started getting higher. And you know, all of a sudden your body's got this energy. And I don't know where it comes from. You know, you just want to get going. You just want to get moving. And then at times your body dies on you.
And what was it like, you know, looking up at the summit of Everest itself?
You see smoke on the water if you look at it. We had a clear view of the summit, sitting at 8,800 meters, a brilliant clear view. That's because we had good weather. So we were very, very fortunate, because not everybody will get to see the summit. Then we've seen the summit of Lhotse. Then we've seen the summit of Amadablam. You know, if you recall, I met the 78-year-old man.
Yes.
He's making his third attempt. He failed twice. He's absolutely brilliant. He's a Korean old man. Went to stay in America, and I got up next to him and I said, you know, let's have a chat. And it was brilliant that this guy could just talk, but I didn't want to keep him talking too much because he was out of air. And so people, you know, they go the extra mile even at that age. It's not to do with age. It's nothing to do with age.
Yes.
Or how strong you are. You just have to be, you know, physically fit and mentally prepared to do this.
What next for Ridwan Nurbai?
I need to go back to the drawing board. The drawing board is my family at home, who's given me a lot of motivation. My wife, Shinaz, and my kids. She normally trains with me. She trained with me for Kili. She trained with me for Everest. She's been through the whole process with me in South Africa. So I got to go back to the drawing board and say, listen, I'm looking at summiting Europe in Russia. And hopefully I'll be able to take that one on as well. It's a lot of ice climbing. It's very different, very, very technical.
In terms of actually summiting Everest, is that something that you may consider?
If I had 1.5 million rand, yes, that's what it will cost you. So if you look at the cost and versus your life, I think base camp is beautiful for everybody to go and do it. There's plenty other summits to do which you can achieve successfully. I'm told that people go to Everest to die. You know, but I think it's just it's more your enthusiasm and what you like to do.
We really appreciate that you've shared this entire experience with us. You've taken the listeners along this journey and given us insight to something that many may not have been familiar with, to something new. And we appreciate that you've shared, you know, the pictures throughout, and you've spoken us through the experience. Jazakallah khair, and all the best for your future hikes.
يا كعبة الأسرار ومنبع الأنوار بالعزم يا مختار أيدت دين الله فداؤك الأرواح ومثلها الأشباح يا خيرة الفتاح من أنبياء الله عليك صلى الله يا خير خلق الله والآل والأصحاب والقوم أهل الله عليك صلى الله يا خير خلق الله والآل والأصحاب والقوم أهل الله لواءك المرفوع وقولك المسموع وحبك المطبوع في مهجة الأواق ندعوك بالسبطين لكشف هذا الغين يا ملجأ الكونين في خطبي بعد الله عليك صلى الله يا خير خلق الله والآل والأصحاب والقوم أهل الله والآل والأصحاب والقوم أهل الله يا من له البرهان وخلقه القرآن ما كانت الأكوان وحقه لولا ها أنت في المحشر مؤيد المظهر فكلما تذكر عليك صلى الله عليك صلى الله يا خير خلق الله والآل والأصحاب والقوم أهل الله عليك صلى الله يا خير خلق الله والآل والأصحاب والقوم أهل الله